Hello and welcome to 4Panel, Geek Show's show all about comics and manga. We are here today with Rob.
Hello.
And me, Ben.
How are you, Ben?
I am pretty damn hungry. How are you?
I am actually quite the same. So we're both hungry today. We had cake, though. Mark Delaney was kind enough to give us cake. He will be on next week's show.
Yes.
So, yes.
But first, we've got news for the day.
Yes. Starting off with, remember we were talking about The Crow?
Yes. The remake that they always talk about, but we never think it's going to happen.
It might be that there's movement on the remake because they've confirmed that Jack Huston, or Houston, however he pronounces his surname, has been confirmed to star in the reboot.
Yeah. And tell you, it's a good pick. He seems like the right sort of build and look for The Crow.
Yeah, I don't know this actor. I don't know. I've not seen him before. I've probably seen him in other stuff, but not actually recognize him. I'm curious as to what else he's been in. But as you said, he does have the right kind of look, the right kind of build. So he might fit the role visually, but I don't know. I don't know if you'd call it an intense role, but it is to a degree, isn't it? Because it is a story about vengeance.
Yes. It's very intense. It's, stuff that he's well known for is like American Hustle, Outlander.
Oh, right. Now I know who he is.
Kill Your Darlings.
Ah, I think he might fit well then.
I can't quite remember, but I think he's also in that god-awful movie, Shrooms.
Ah. Well, everyone,
I think that was the script's fault, not his.
Yeah, everyone has a movie that they don't want to acknowledge. So, yeah. Anyway, Jack Huston, has been confirmed to star in The Crow. We look forward to more news about that in the near future. It might actually happen after such a long time.
Yeah, I still don't believe it till I see it.
Yes, we've been promised far too much in the past. Anyway, moving on. We've got some news about Secret Wars, I believe.
Yeah, there's quite a lot coming out about Secret Wars. Like, recently came out the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in it. Like, everyone
really?
Knows that.
Wow.
But some of the latest announcements is X-Men 92 is going to be coming into it. If you have no X-Men 92, it's the comic based on the 90s animated series.
I was about to say X-Men 92. That doesn't sound familiar, but now you've explained it. That's actually pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Cartoon version of the X-Men is still my favorite version of the X-Men. Like, it was goofy and silly, but it was so good. And
I've just got the theme tune in my head now.
Yep. Yeah, everyone knows it. I think it's a great fit for Secret Wars.
Yeah, I agree. I think the 90s cartoon did a lot of things it did a lot of things right with the X-Men.
Yeah.
The movies and even the other cartoons that they did for the X-Men, the Evolution, for example, just couldn't seem to match it.
Yeah, so, although I do hope that Wolverine's learned how to use his claws. Because in the old cartoons, you like, get them out, then throw a guy.
Yeah, I know. I was just Well, I mean, thing is, it's a kid's cartoon. He has to throw them. Because if he hits them with his claws, they're basically dead.
It's like he always, when he did actually slice someone, like, it's a robot.
Yeah, I know. They did exactly the same thing with Samurai Jack, if you remember. He was always slicing robots to pieces, but when it came to a person.
So it made a bit more sense in Samurai Jack since he was in the future. X-Men was modern day, but apparently they had very lifelike robots.
Yes, and Sentinels as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Actually, I guess if they can make the Sentinels, the robots aren't that hard to believe. But still, it was.
Yeah.
It just always amused me that he had blades coming out of his hands and threw everyone.
Yeah.
But he managed to punch them without the claws hitting.
Even though his claws were out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's some impressive muscle control there.
Yeah. So, yeah. Some of the best X-Men came from the 90s cartoon, and because they not so long ago started making the comic X-Men 92 that mimics that whole feeling.
oh, wouldn't that be fun? You know, kind of Ultimate X-Men versus X-Men 92, see you'd win.
I would like to see that.
So, yeah, there's also some Iron news as
yes,
well.
Yes, everyone's heard that about the Secret Wars, Iron Wars, Armor Wars even.
Yeah.
And a load of designs for different characters have come out, including Thor, Spider-Man, Kingpin.
Kingpin?
Kingpin, yep.
Hang on, Kingpin's a villain.
I know, except the thing is, I don't know how they're going to do this. If Kingpin's helping because, hey, I need a city left if I'm going to rule it. So
okay.
Or maybe it's just, if everyone's in armor, they need to have bad guys in armor as well to fight the armor.
Yeah, see, the thing is, Kingpin isn't actually superhuman, though, is he?
No, he is just a strong guy with a lot of like money and influence.
And it's odd. It's a bit of an odd choice because Kingpin wasn't superhuman. He was just a very large guy with big muscles who only looked fat.
Yeah.
I think that's the mistake everyone made. Because they thought he was fat, that he was going to be easy, but then they found out there was a hell of a lot of muscle under that rather thin layer of blubber.
So, like I said, he is only human, but that's why if everyone's wearing armor,
yeah,
he's not going to stand a chance if he doesn't have his own armor.
Yes.
And looking at it, it's sort of reminiscent of... what's the name of the giant armored bad guy?
You mean Juggernaut?
No, not Juggernaut. He was in the first Iron Man movie.
Oh, him. I can't remember his name.
Is that... Because
I looked at that and I thought Hulkbuster as soon as I saw it.
Really? I kind of see what you mean, but it's very... Actually, he reminds me of Lex Luthor a lot.
I actually thought it was Lex Luthor. My very first thought when I saw it was, that's Lex Luthor. Oh, no, it's Marvel.
It's another bald man in a giant armored suit. It's easy to get that mixed up.
Yeah. Yeah, he went there. He went there.
I think there's something in like every comic universe. If you're a bald white man, you are going to be a supervillain. Other than Professor X.
I was about to say, what does that make Professor X? Is he secretly the ultimate supervillain?
Well, then again, he does convince teenagers to go fight giant battles. That's not exactly a morally correct thing to do.
This is true. There is a lot of truth in what you just said. So, you heard it here first, folks. Professor Xavier is secretly a supervillain, getting teenagers to do his dirty work in his ultimate goal of world conquest.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And we all thought Magneto was the bad guy.
Nah, Magneto's just looking out for the rights of mutants.
No, that makes him the bad, bad guy.
I always thought the bad guy in X-Men was the politicians trying to pass laws to kill mutants and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there is that.
It's a bit more grey than most old cartoons.
It is. X-Men's one of those weird ones. It kind of gets political from time to time, and then everybody goes, no, I'm bored of this, where are the explosions? Yes. Anyway, moving on. Right, Jeff Loveness. Most people will know Jeff Loveness because he spends his days writing for the late-night show Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yeah.
He is doing a three-parter for Marvel, which deals with the classic, the old, and the new. And it's going to run in Amazing Spider-Man Special Number 1, Inhuman Special Number 1, and the all-new Captain America Special Number 1. Now, most people, most of the talk about this kind of classic, old, and new. And you could automatically think that classic is going to refer to, say, Spider-Man or Captain America.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. Because... Loveness is doing something that I don't think anyone expected. He's resurrecting a Golden Age character who hasn't been seen in decades.
Oh.
Red Raven.
Oh.
Now, this is a very, very interesting thing, because a lot of the Golden Age characters, you know, only the really, really, really major characters have lasted until today. Most of them have fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, unless you had a Fox cartoon tie-in, you're not about anymore.
Well, not even that. This was before Fox cartoons.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. It's just that sort of lot that's kept going.
Red Raven is actually the name of three separate characters. The original Red Raven, though, was a flying superhero. He appeared in print once in 1940, and then not again until 1958, and occasionally since then. The second Red Raven was named Danya, another flying superhero and daughter of the original Red Raven. She appeared in print in 1992 and only occasionally since then.
Yeah.
And then Redford Raven was a Wild West villain who owned a set of mechanical wings and was called Red Raven, and has appeared three times in 1964, 1985 and 1987. Tells you how sporadically this character has been used.
I think at one point Red Raven was one of the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, but that was later changed for Angel.
Yes, I think that might be the case. Very, very, very sporadic character. I am curious, because the character was created by Joe Simon, who was the co-creator of Captain America.
Yeah.
So I am curious how Red Raven is going to fit into this. Apparently, Red Raven is the reason why the Inhumans, whichever Inhuman it is, Captain America and Spider-Man all get together. So Red Raven is going to be a central character in this story. And I am really curious how this is going to work. Because aside from the flying, I don't know anything about Red Raven.
Yeah, that's the thing. And flying is sort of a boring power now.
Yeah, it's just kind of, fly? Yeah, can't everybody?
If you think, when you look at him, he's very reminiscent of Hawkman and Hawkwoman from the DC universe.
And
both of them are kind of boring on their own. That's why they're always seen with the Justice League.
Captain America has a sidekick called Falcon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And even him, he shoots like energy beams and stuff. And
he's not good enough for his own comic, though, is he?
Yeah, he has his own comic.
Falcon has his own comic?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's news to me. He never did before.
I'm pretty sure he does.
It was always Captain America and Falcon. If he's got his new comic now, okay, fantastic, you know. But yeah, he didn't for a while. For a long, long time, he didn't have his own comic, I think.
Well, he's always sort of appeared as part of the Avengers, but he does have his own comic.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So, yeah, anyway, there's already the Falcon, so...
Can you remember a couple of weeks ago on The Geek Show, we talked about characters who can't survive on their own? These seem to be those characters. They're like, we are the flying ones with wings. We can't hold our own comic, so we need to be part of this team.
Yeah. I mean, I am interested in seeing Red Raven again, mainly because the character is such a sporadic one. I don't know if they're going to use the original Red Raven or Red Raven's daughter, Danya. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. I do worry, though, because Falcon is also red with wings, whether it might cause some confusion.
Maybe it's a love story between Red Raven and Falcon. We don't know. It could be. If it's the daughter and she gets, she thinks Falcon's quite handsome and he thinks she's got pretty wings, you know, then there could be something there. Maybe it's like, maybe it's a bit like, you know, Romeo and Juliet or West Side Story.
Okay, I don't know. Ravens, where you're going.
Ravens and Falcons, they don't mix.
Oh, wait, do we have another story?
Yes, we do. Sorry. For some reason, I had an image of Spider-Man and Captain America doing the whole dance routine from West Side Story.
Okay, then.
I don't know where my brain goes sometimes. Anyway, moving on. Unfortunately, we're going to have... there's some, fans of Detective Conan, or as he's known, as it's known in the West, Case Closed. The manga series are going to have to wait a little bit for... new issues of the manga series, the long-running manga series, because the creator has been in the creator Gosho Aoyama has been in hospital for surgery and is going to be staying in hospital until summer. So we do wish him well. You know, we hope he does recover, have a full recovery, and so fans of Detective Conan and Case Closed, just be patient. You know.
Yeah, well, like, you can't really complain. It's been going on for so long, and without like any huge hiatuses. So yeah, you can't blame the person for having surgery.
I mean, it's been, you know, it's been going since the early 90s.
Yeah.
20 years on the same manga series. It's, yeah, it's actually quite intimidating when you think about it, working on the same series for
that long.
That's
2 decades.
Yeah, working on the same series.
Yep. It's like recently Hideo Kojima said that he doesn't want to work on Metal Gear anymore. I was like, guy's been working on that for 2 decades.
Yeah. I mean, it's so very different from Western comics in terms of how, you know, how much a person, you know, how long a person works on the same title. I think the Savage Dragon is the only one where the guy has been working on it himself since its inception.
Yeah.
You know, the creator is still the same guy doing the stories and the artwork for it. So, yeah, I think the Savage Dragon is the only example in Western media that is similar to it, to how manga does it. So, yeah, anyway, we do wish him well. We're going to move on. We're going to have a quick look at the top 10 comics and graphic novels from February.
Yes.
So, right, starting off with the top 10 comic books, at number 10 was Justice League number 39.
This is not one I've had to read. So.
Yes, I know. Silk number 1 is an interesting one, because I think that's one that I wanted to pick up. That's one that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, Silk is one of the alternate dimensions Spider-Men. Oh, well, this time Spider-Woman.
Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man was at number 8. Darth Vader, issue 2 of Darth Vader was at number 7.
Yeah.
I've got to say issue 2 because there's a reason why. Amazing Spider-Man number 14, 15 was at 8, 14 was at 6.
So Spider-Man's doing pretty well for himself right now.
Well, the Spider franchise is doing pretty well in this period, because you got Silk, you got the Amazing Spider-Man twice. Then you've got Batman number 39, Star Wars number 2, Spider-Gwen at number 3, Darth Vader number 1 was the second best-selling comic, and the best-selling comic of February was Orphan Black number 1.
Yeah.
So Spider-Man, the Spider-Universe and the Star Wars universe pretty much killed it in February.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think
DC need to up their game a little.
Yeah, I think they do. Batman was the only one that kind of broke into the top 10.
Yeah.
Oh no, Justice League number 39 was at number 10. But you know, DC do need to up their game.
I was not surprised about Spider-Gwen at all. It's like been a huge event, the fact it's coming out, like a lot of, because she was a fan favorite, so it's sort of like a victory for the fans that she's getting her own series.
I like the I've done a little bit of reading into the whole Gwen Stacy thing. I like the fact that in her universe she couldn't save Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And in Parker's universe he couldn't save Gwen Stacy. I like the fact that there's that kind of
the correlations
between the two. That I found really interesting, and it'd be interesting to see how if any kind of relationship developed between them.
Well, probably not. Peter's dead.
Peter Parker's dead.
In her universe, yes.
No, I mean, you know, the Park from his universe, because they do meet.
They're both in their own universes again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like it was a huge event that they like sort of collided. I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon.
Yeah, but then again, this is Spider-Man, and there is all the universe dimension trip-hopping stuff that Spider-Man is notorious for some reason. It used to be that Spider-Man just kind of captured bank robbers and stuff like that.
Still do that?
I want them to do... I mean, you know Shattered Dimensions, the Spider-Man game?
Yes.
I found that a really interesting game.
I found sections of that game really interesting.
That's what I mean, you know. But as a concept, it was pretty interesting.
Well, that's what the multiverse event was. Yeah. It was going into, like, a lot of the Spider-Men that were in that game were in the multiverse event.
Yeah, because you remember the 90s Spider-Man cartoon?
Yeah.
They actually did something similar in that, you know, the whole Madame Web stuff.
Yeah.
Because he actually met, like, the Spider-Man 2099 and, you know, the clone of him and various others
yeah.
from different timelines and different realities. So it's nice to actually see that. But it's confusing for me because there's all those Spider-Men now. I don't actually know which one's the original Spider-Man.
Well, there isn't. That's the idea of multiverse, is they are all their own Spider-Men.
But which they one just... do I read now?
Whichever one you like the most. I don't read the normal Spider-Man. I read Spider-Gwen.
I'm going to start reading Spider-Gwen, because at least I can start at the beginning there.
You should. It's good.
All right. Okay. Anyway.
You should also read the multiverse event as well then. Because
okay. I'll read the multiverse event. Anyway. Top 10 graphic novels and trade paperbacks from February.
Yeah.
Starting off at number 10, Kick-Ass 3.
Yeah, no surprise. We talked about this on the show.
Yeah.
It's a huge series, and the fact that a third volume's out is pretty big.
Yep. In ninth spot, Saga Volume 1.
Yep.
Which we've also covered on the shows. Miss Marvel Volume 1 is at number 8. Number 7 is The Walking Dead Volume 11.
Walking Dead, a constant top placer, really.
Yeah, it is. Number 6 is Trees Volume 1. I've not heard of Trees.
Oh, well, they're these big things with leaves.
God, thank you so much. I walked into that, didn't I? Yes. I really just kind of... Oh.
You can't say that and then not expect that not reaction.
Yeah. Let me just gather my thoughts. So, Trees Volume 1. Number 5 is Chew Volume 9, Chicken Tenders. Now, I actually found out what Chew is about.
Okay.
Because I did talk about this and I got really good. Didn't actually know what it is. It's a comic about a guy called whose surname is Chew, and he works for the Food and Drug Administration.
Okay.
Which is why the title works, because his surname is Chew and the title is Chew, to do with food. And I, after looking into it, I thought, what an idea. This is a really, really good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I am in the process of getting Chew the back issues, because it actually, it's tickled my funny bone. Anyway, moving on. Saga Volume 4 trade paperback is at number 4. The Fade Out Volume 1 is at number 3. Not heard of that one either. Sex Criminals Volume 2, Two Worlds, One Cop is at number 2.
Great name.
Yeah, I know. And number one is Superman Earth 1, Volume 3.
Hmm.
I'm kind of surprised at that, given how much... given the fact that Image have pretty much dominated.
Well, Image do have one of the most varied publishers out there.
Well, like, Marvel only had two spots in the top 10. DC had one. The other 7 are all Image.
Yeah, but that's because they publish a lot of the more different, diverse comics.
Yeah, this is true. But although the Superman one did make a killing for DC.
Oh, of course it did. It's Superman.
Well, Kick-Ass 3 was $24.99, right? And $24.99.
Yeah.
DC's Superman Earth 1 was $22.99.
Yeah.
And it's basically the second highest... price for a trade paperback in that list.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it would have made a killing for him. So, yes, anyway, that was the top 10 comics and graphic novels from February. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we'll be back with some comics and a little bit of Lenore.
Hello, this is Nicolas Cage speaking. I'm just here to promote the latest movie podcast from The Geek Show. It is called Cinema Galactica, and... yeah, I'm Nicolas Cage. Thank you.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to 4Panel. And we're getting into some comics now. So, Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I can go first if you want.
Okay, so what have you got for us, Ben?
First up, Hack/Nailbiter. A cross event between the Hack/ universe and the Nailbiter universe. From, you know, Filmalia, Hack/ is about two people who go around taking out undead killers, and Nailbiters is about a FBI agent investigating a town that's had numerous serial killers come from it. And these are one-shot events where it's just the two worlds colliding about Vlad, who's a giant gentle... Everyone calls him the gentle giant because he's a big guy, but he's quite kind, really. But yeah, he can really cause some damage. A girl called Cassie, who is a bit less soft. She her weapon of choice is a baseball bat with nails in it. So in this issue, they have been called to Buckaroo, the town from Nailbiter, and about possible information about Cassie's parents. A guy who owns the shop there says that he knows, he thinks he's found the graves of her parents, but yeah, when they get out there, it's got Vlad written on the tombstone, and they get attacked by a guy dressed up as a luchador.
Okay.
I say it's got all the sort of the... if you're not like familiar with either of the comics, it's actually a great place to jump in because you get sort of a good understanding of how the characters act, their personalities, and how they deal with stuff, and the sort of interactions with the world they have. It's very like beautifully drawn. If you're not a fan of sort of blood and guts and stuff, it can get a bit brutal at times. But his storytelling is done really well and very interestingly. And like, I don't want to spoil anything, but what they do in the end is just amazing.
Okay. I think I've got to read this. Right. I'm going to start off with, because there's one that I'm going to wax lyrical about later, but I'm going to start off with a pretty oddball one from Boom Studios and IDW. I've got to say thanks to Comics Domain for keeping us supplied with interesting titles.
Yeah.
You know, Star Trek and Planet of the Apes, The Primate Directive. Never thought I'd see those two titles together on the same comic book. Well, yeah, Star Trek and Planet of the Apes together in one comic book. Yes, you heard it. It's what's the word I'm looking for? It's something that is unusual at the best of times. You basically have Kirk and the rest of the crew from the original Enterprise have basically gone through a dimensional rift chasing a Klingon bird of prey, right? And they've ended up at the Planet of the Apes. And they've met, I've forgotten the name. What's the two apes' names? And Cornelius and Zira from the movie, The Planet of the Apes. And they've made friends with them. And they've met the human guy. Again, I've forgotten his name.
Great with names today, Rob.
Taylor. Yes. they meet Taylor, who wants them to help him get revenge on the apes.
Yeah.
Because of everything they've done to him. And Kirk basically refuses. He says, that's not part of what we do. You know, we follow the Prime Directive. They're a pre-warp civilization. We can't touch them. Doesn't matter what happened in the past.
Yeah.
Right? Taylor's obviously not happy with this, so he basically knocks out Chekhov and steals his communicator and gets beamed back aboard the ship by pretending to be the captain. Because apparently he sounds a lot like Captain Kirk.
Hello, my name is Captain Kirk.
Exactly. So
what's
the,
your first name? I don't know.
So the transport operator, he's surprised at the fact that his this guy has arrived in a loincloth and then basically kicks him in the face.
I'd be surprised too.
Yes, and then nicks his clothes. So, yeah, Taylor is running around the ship. He tries to steal a shuttlecraft, but it doesn't work because he can't control it. He doesn't know where the controls are. So, yeah. Eventually, things get resolved, but it turns out that the Klingons have been making deals with the gorillas, giving the gorilla general a disruptor and tricking them in order to try and bring the Planet of the Apes into the Klingon Empire. Dun dun dun. To be continued.
Okay, so what did you think?
I thought it was odd. My left brain is going Charlton Heston with "Get your paws off me, you damn dirty ape," and my right brain is going, "We must escape the Planet of the Apes," because that's apparently how Captain Kirk talks. Kind of, I can't do it properly.
You need to really extend your brakes.
That's much better. That's much better. Ben does it much better than I do. But yeah, I've got these two conflicting, conflicting voices in my head, and they just don't quite gel. Star Trek and Planet of the Apes, I think, are two very... They kind of make it work in the comic book, but it's just kind of... When you're really familiar with the franchises, your mind rebels a little bit.
So do you think the other week you read the Zorro Django crossover?
The Zorro Django one really works.
Yeah. So did they just not mesh as well as those two did?
I think they didn't mesh as well because even though in the original Star Trek series we saw them exposed to pre-warp civilizations and sometimes totally tribal ones as well.
Yeah.
Even though there is that, this is the Planet of the Apes we're talking about.
Yeah.
Such an iconic franchise that it kind of... Okay, if it had been the Enterprise and, the Planet of the Apes without Taylor...
Yeah.
That might have worked. But the fact that they've included Taylor means that they're talking about the original Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah.
Which throws that spanner in the works. It just kind of... You've got two alpha males in the same story, and they're both... continue to be alpha males all the way through the story. You got two basically protagonists who basically just don't meld with each other. Do you see what I mean?
But the issue that they're both alpha males in Django and Zorro, aren't they both alpha males as
no,
well?
No, because they actually there's some blending there that happens between the two of them. Django is basically working as Zorro's bodyguard. They have an established relationship. They both know of each other's reputations, but Django doesn't know who Zorro is. He has his suspicions.
Yeah.
And Don Diego knows exactly who Django is, which is why he hired him.
Yeah.
The basic premise with Django and Zorro is that they are already aware of each other.
They've got an established...
Yeah. It's supposed to be in the same timeline as well. The same kind of... It's the Old West.
Yeah.
They're both characters from there. Whereas... In the Star Trek and Planet of the Apes one, even when Taylor was an astronaut, the technology that he had access to was nowhere near the level of the Enterprise.
So there's also the whole dimensional shift thing going on.
There's the whole dimensional shift thing going on. Eventually the Enterprise has to go back, that sort of thing. It's just there's too many factors that make it a clunky story.
Well, tell you, they... trying to find an excuse how to clunk these two together. It's not like it's a flowing thing. But did they do well of what it was?
It's enjoyable, but also forgettable.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those ones that it's fun while you're reading it, but it's too much like an original series episode.
Yeah.
How many original series episodes of Star Trek would you sit down and watch?
I think I've sat and watched five at a time.
And how many can you remember?
About four.
See what I mean?
And that's mostly because, that looks like it's being attacked by flying vomit.
Yep. And that's the point. I mean, everyone kind of glorifies the original series, and they've tried to make it too much like that.
Well, to tell the truth, the comic, the Star Wars that the comic's based on is off those series.
Star Wars?
Star Trek, sorry.
I made that mistake as well.
So, since it's based on that series, it's meant to have that campiness. It's meant to have that.
It's meant to have that. But, you know, it works, but it's forgettable. I can't really say fairer than that. Okay. Anyway.
Next up, I have Nailbiter's hash slack, hack slash.
Which is the reverse.
Yeah, this is because on the back of hack slash Nailbiter's, you have Nailbiter's hack slash. Another story about Vlad and Cassie. This time, they've heard about a number of murders happening in a certain city, a certain town. Can you guess which one? It's Buckaroo.
What?
Buckaroo's, that's where Nailbiter is based.
That's Buckaroo's not a town, it's a bloody game. You hang things off a horse and it goes Buckaroo.
So anyway, they're in Buckaroo and they're at a fair that's going on there. Like, well, this sick guy's going around. What sort of sick freak wouldn't resist this fair? It's too happy for them to ignore. And Vlad has an amazing time. He wins a giant squid plush thing. He wanted to go on the Ferris wheel, but it was broken down, unfortunately. As he has to return to the car because he ate too many corn dogs. I just love this giant, monstrous-looking guy who wears a gas mask all the time. I was like, it's like, you look silly carrying that thing around. It is a trophy of my pride. So, you gotta love the relationship between Cassie and Vlad. So he goes back to the car, and Cassie starts following someone she thinks is suspicious. Ends up, this person is Warren. If you do not know about Nailbiter's, I'm not gonna spoil anything.
Okay.
He plays a good part in Nailbiter. And ends up, he's looking for a butcher. That's what they call all the killers that come out of Buckaroo.
Okay.
And, of course, Cassie's looking the same person. So they team up and, like, we need to find something. And it's like, how do you find them? We look for what's strange. Like, well, there's a Ferris wheel that should be working that isn't. We should probably check that out. Check it out. And they find the guy they're looking for, who's a bit of a twisted guy from Buckaroo who, you know, when you, as you're something kind of gruesome, you think to yourself, like, what would it be like if I just pushed that guy off that cliff? What would happen if I picked up my razor instead of my toothbrush in the morning?
Ooh,
what
nasty.
Would happen if I accidentally shot myself with a nail gun? This guy likes to do these actions to other people to find out what it would be like.
Okay.
And, manages to knock down Cassie and grab Warren and take him on the Ferris wheel. Because have you ever thought, what happened if I just slipped and fell out the Ferris wheel? It's like, and of course it's up to Cassie to try and save Warren. So it does amazingly its storytelling. This, it, like,
yeah,
that razor blade example. I told you. That it starts with this guy doing that. He, like, he asks himself the question, and there's a guy tied to his chair, and he's just like, and he's just holding, like, a razor blade on a stick, and you just see the silhouette over the fairground. It's beautifully done. The art direction's really nice. And like I said, it's a great introduction to the characters.
Okay.
Like, and tell the truth, if you can pick up hack slash Nailbiter's slash Nailbiter's hack slash, you totally should. It's a great way to learn the series. Like, I came out of this very interesting. Like, as you can tell, I know quite a bit about this, these series. Not because I've read them, because this interested me enough that I wanted to look into them.
Fantastic.
So, that's, yeah.
That's exactly what you want from a comic book, isn't it?
Yep.
Right, okay. I guess I'm next up to bat.
Yep.
Miracle Man.
Yes,
right.
You have
now,
nothing but good things to talk about this one, haven't you?
Miracle Man is unusual. It's a bit of a throwback, and not. And I've done a bit of checking around about this, but I'll get to that in a minute. This Miracle Man is Book 3, Chapter 6, and it's called simply Olympus. There has been, something has happened, and half of London is gone. People and all. Miracle Man and Miracle Woman look down from on high, and they are, you know, they're sorry for what's happened, but they see it as an essential part of humanity's growth, because they want to lead humanity down a different path. Not the path of destruction, but the path to being free, actually understanding what freedom truly means. And Miracle Man and Miracle Woman and their allies, they embark on this massive project, and they basically bend the world leaders to their will. The world leaders realize very quickly there's no point in using nuclear weapons against them, because, you know, they might not actually do anything. And it gets to the point where they introduce concepts like genetic engineering, things like that. Now, this story is set in the 1980s, and it says on the back, the original writer. So I am assuming that this is still Neil Gaiman writing Miracle Man. And if it is, then it is truly awesome, because he's really captured something in this chapter that I haven't seen in comics in a long time. It's kind of this lyrical, awe-inspiring feeling. There's part of this a lot of this chapter deals with the changes in humanity that Miracle Man and Miracle Woman bring about. The fact that they are offering women the chance to give birth to a being who is potentially a god, and in comparative power terms, they are a god compared to normal human beings. They are changing the land. They're fixing the ozone layer. They're bringing grass back to the desert. They're basically reshaping the world the way they want it, and no one can stop them. And the key thing here is, because Miracle Woman wants to give humanity something back that it has been lacking for a long time in her eyes, and that is love. She loves everybody. And basically, what they're effectively doing is creating a new race of gods. But this time they're saying, you don't have to be subservient to us. You can be exactly like us. All of us can be gods together. And the old religions, Christianity, Islam, all those, they're basically fighting a losing battle as more and more people look at Miracle Man and Miracle Woman and accept the hand that they're offering, saying, we want to be like you. We want to fly through the sky like you. We want to be free of this world like you. And it's difficult to describe. This is one of those comics that you really have to read to experience just how different it is. This is the artwork is gorgeous. It's brilliant. But it is a little bit old school.
Nothing wrong with old school.
Nothing wrong with old school. Exactly right. It's the writing that brings this to life, though. Second to none. It's amongst the best writing I've seen in a comic in the last 5 years, easily.
Yeah.
This is old school writing, but it really works in this context. It really, really works. This is simply, it's magnificent. It really is that good. I think this is one of Marvel's best works in decades.
I just want, like, I don't know if it comes across enough, but there's a difference between liking something and passionately liking something, and yeah. Del Rob loves this with a passion.
It really is that good. I cannot recommend it enough. I'm not going to say it's for everybody, because it does have mature content in there.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody. If you're into explosions, if you're into, like, you know, shields bouncing off walls and making strange noises, you know, then you might not like this. But if you're into something a lot more old school, but brilliant, you know, something that kind of harks back to, I don't know if I'd call it the glory days of comics, but the days when comics used to make people just kind of think, will we ever be able to do that? Can we do that? You know, is humanity possible, capable of doing that? You know, I think it harks back to those days, and that's one of the really, really brilliant things about this comic. It's just that awe, that wonder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Miracle Man, Can't recommend it enough. Seriously. Seriously good.
Yeah.
And seriously, thank you, Comic Domain, for letting us let me read this, especially.
Okay, next up, I have been reading Earth 2, issue 32. And this comic, just this one issue, covers one of the things I love the most in comics and one of the things I hate the most in comics.
Ooh, interesting.
Quick overview of what's happening in the story. Apocalypse is surrounding the planet and a large drill thing is coming out of their ship and ready to basically core the planet. And the remaining heroes have to try and stop it before the planet is destroyed. Now, this is where it gets to one of my favorite things in comics. The stakes feel so legitimate. Like, throughout this, Amazonia has fallen, the avatars have been defeated, the planet's basically half of it's been terraformed already for the apocalypse needs, and outside help has been cut off. A lot of the allies have been, are presumed dead. And I love this feeling of tension that it's not very often in comics the superhero is on the back heel. And okay, particularly not to this level. Like, this is literally everything is going wrong. And, like, Batman suggesting, okay, like, we've lost. Let's just take them down with us. Because it's getting to the point where it's like, yeah, it doesn't look like we're going to do anything. Like, they decide not going to take out... our main goal is to get as many people away as possible. And then it comes to what my least favorite thing in comics. Like, there's a big, awful thing we can't stop, and we stopped it. Like, they very instantly, like, despite this, they're like going, oh, we failed so many missions, or, like, even the ones we succeeded on made no difference. And then they finish it with a very obvious thing that's, like, pretty much the first thing most people would have tried. Like, well, second, you start trying to punch it. But still, it's just, I dislike when comics take something that's so huge and then they just finish it very instantly.
Yeah.
Like, but for the fact that this comic has got some, like, great insight into characters and development of characters, like, you see the creation of a couple of them, like, in flashbacks.
And yeah.
It's very interesting. Like, the content is interesting. I'm just annoyed that they managed to clean everything up so neatly and so quickly.
Hmm. Sounds intriguing, though.
It's intriguing. Just, I wish they spent more time on the half.
Yeah. I've noticed that with some comics. You know, the first half of the comic, it'd be great. You know, it really catches your attention. And then things just kind of get lazy towards the end, I suppose.
Sometimes I feel like they need to have, because a comic is only a certain length, they want to have a decent conclusion to each comic.
Yeah.
But doing that, they have to rush what should have taken a couple of comics.
Yeah, I wish they went back to you remember the old days of comics? I call them, back during the kind of 80s when they weren't bothered by these things. That basically, if a part of the story ended there, that was it. Tough luck, get the next issue. And they use the words to be continued a lot.
Yeah. So manga doesn't seem to have this problem with it. Like, if they need a issue that is them just talking about something, they will have an issue where they're just talking about something.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, the only time you see the whole rush job appearing is when a manga is going to be cancelled.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only time you'll see it. Now, if it's going to be cancelled because the magazines have decided to cancel it, then you'll definitely see rushed work. It's the same thing that happened with manga like Asclepius and stuff like that. But if it's, you know, the creator has basically said, right, this is where it's going to end, you know, that's a different matter entirely.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, we are pretty much done with the comics stuff.
Yep.
Time to move on to Purple Nurples and Pink Bellies.
If you don't know what we're talking about, There's a series called Lenore.
Lenore, depending on how you pronounce it. I don't know. I pronounce it Lenore, you pronounce it Lenore.
Yeah, well.
I think they're both right.
If there was an accent on the E, I'd call it Lenora. But
I just pronounce it Lenore because it's based on an Edgar Allan Poe poem by the same of the same name.
Yeah.
And the character is basically taken from that poem.
Yeah.
Guy called Roman Dirge, whose real name is Roman Elliot, and he used to be a magician.
Oh.
Seriously. The guy used to be a magician because in school his art teacher told him he was never going to amount to anything. So he gave up school and artwork and went and became a magician.
As you do.
Yes, as you do. So, yes. That's not to say that all you budding artists out there should go and become magicians first.
No. Told you, the modern telling of that would be, like, you're never going to amount to anything, you should just quit and become a barista.
Yes.
that is the fate for a lot of
Learn to pour that coffee. Yes, you can express yourself with the coffee artwork. Anyway, Lenora, the cute little dead girl, it's run from 1998 to 2007, and it looks like it's made a return with the new one, a new collection called Pink Bellies, which Ben has.
Yep.
I had the lovely purple nurples.
Yep.
I love that. It tickles my funny bone. My phrase of the day. Purple nurples just makes me smile.
Okay.
Just the words, purple nurples.
Anyway, enough of your purple nurples and on to the stories Lenore, are about.
They're a little bit random.
Lenore is a little dead girl who lives alone in this mansion waiting for her parents to return. With her friend, who's like a little stuffed toy called Ragamuffin, and a bucket thing called...
Yeah.
What's he named?
I've forgotten.
Oh, that's good. I'll find his name. But through this first one, Pink Bellies, you found...
Mr. Gosh, is it? Or is it... No, it's not Mr. Gosh.
I'll find it out. So, this is basically the story of a ancient god known as Taxidermy, who's there to protect children. And he basically looks over Eleanor. And this is Eleanor finding out about her past, Taxidermy's link to it, and then trying to save Taxidermy from the old gods who have come to get him, as well as a group of soldiers who are there to kill Taxidermy and kidnap Eleanor. Lenore, even. And doing it with quite a funny turnaround, really.
Yeah.
It's got very random, quite childish humour, but it can't help but make me laugh. So, and the way they establish the characters is just amazing. The first issue is basically introducing the characters as, like, it has archaeologists looking at the aged tomb to find Taxidermy, and then it has, like, Lenore in her house, and, like, a TV show that's, like, one of these ghost hunter ones comes to our house, and they're like, okay, we need to sort of scare these guys off.
Yeah.
And it's just a great way to introduce the characters and the concept of the world, because, like, what's a better way than doing this TV show parodying, like, Most Haunted and that sort of stuff? So you get to learn how the characters interact, how they do what they do, and just have some comedic moments.
Yes. Sorry, I was just admiring Lenore there. Purple Nurples is a bit of an odd one. It's it deals a bit with nightmares and fears and stuff like that. There is a, you know, but like Pink Bellies, it has all the characters in there. Taxidermy makes an appearance, and there's a brilliant scene with Taxidermy.
Pootie's the other guy, by the way.
Yeah, Pootie, sorry. There's a brilliant scene with Taxidermy in this. the cops are surrounding the house for some reason, and taxidermy's in the house saying, you know, I look after all these kids, and taxidermy looks horrifying, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
With his slightly fly and featured head. And it's just Lenora sitting there looking vacant, and he pokes her, and her head falls onto the table. He's standing there, and it's just a couple of panels, and then you hear a flush, and then out of this little archway comes Lenora's brain, looks at taxidermy and goes, ooh, and then clamps back into her head, and then she's like, oh, taxidermy, where'd you get here? It's just really funny little moments like that.
They do have some, like I said, it's very immature humor, but it's very funny. It's like an ongoing joke about Ragamuffin being stuck in a bear's anus.
Yeah. There's a great one about Ragamuffin in it here. It's just a picture of him, and he's sitting there on the couch. Behind him, there's someone's painted, King Douche Nozzle sits here.
Okay.
I like Lenora. I think it's cute, it's charming, it's funny, it's quirky.
Yeah.
It's definitely eccentric. I think as a fun little read, it's not one that you'd want maybe the kids reading. It's not really kids reading, is it?
No.
But as a fun little read for somebody who wants something different.
So here's the thing: I don't think I could sit down, like, because we've got 3 volumes of this in.
Yeah.
Pink Bellies,
Purple Nurbles, and Swirlies, which Mark has got. He's going to be on next week with us.
I don't think I could sit down and read them all, like, back to back. Like, yeah. I think this is something I could... Because it was getting tedious to me, like, sat reading the one.
Yeah.
It's a bit too immature for me. Like, I can sit down and take it in parts, but as a continuous thing...
It's a take-your-time-with series,
so
isn't it?
So it's sort of thing like... Pick it up, read a few pages, put it down.
Yeah,
come back to it later. Like, but it's a good comic. It's just not a continuous read.
See, yeah, I do get what you mean. I think that's the best way to read it. I honestly do. I think that you get the most out of it when you just take your time with it. It's not something that you really want to read continuously. The fact that it's broken into chapters actually helps.
Yeah.
You know, so actually helps with that.
If you're into, like, your stupid humor and stuff, this does it amazingly.
Yeah.
Like, there's a great scene where, actually, there's an entire comic, that, like, one chapter I absolutely adored.
Yeah.
That was, these soldiers have been sent after her, and they send in, like, some sleep gas. And because she's dead, it doesn't have the general, effect that they were wanting.
Yeah.
Instead, they just all start tripping balls. And they're, running through this forest trying to get to taxidermies. And they're seeing stuff, and they're, they're trying to get through, they walk through this water, and they come out, and they've all got horse bodies. And, just okay, I think we're fine. I'll just ask this worm that's in this hot tub here. And see if he knows if everything's back to normal. I said, there's just a scene in it where there's a bridge where all your dead pets wait for you to come to heaven.
Ah.
And there's about 100 of them all looking very annoyed. And we just have to cross this bridge so we can get to taxidermy's house. Like, are you sure we have to? So he just... Stuff like that. There was some jokes that just made me laugh. Like, she's being shown a video of her, acknowledging something on the phone. And her reaction was, ugh, vertical film. I was like, you just, that sort of thing just cracked
There's
me
even
up.
A pony reference in there, isn't there?
There is a pony reference. When they all have pony bodies, one of them has Twilight Sparkle's body. And it's like, friendship is, oh, no, not this.
Oh, yes. Okay, so, even though it is childish to a degree, it sounds like you actually liked it.
I did enjoy it, but I'm just saying, there was a lot, it was very childish a lot of the time.
Oh, gotcha.
So, I can't, I don't mind childish humour that much, but it's just a lot to take at once.
It's amazing how things change, though.
Yeah.
What is it? There's 19 years difference between us, is there? Or 18 years difference between us? Because I like the childish thing. I think it's that regression into senility that's happening. So
you have a very childish sense of humour. I know you do.
Yes, I do.
You laugh your head off at the slightest hint of the sexual innuendo.
Well, just innuendo in general, or, you know, well, anything even remotely funny, I will fall off my chair at it.
Exactly.
You know, I believe laughter is one of the most powerful forces in the world.
Yeah.
So, find everything funny. Anyway, yes, we're at the end of the show. We've been four panel, and I've been Rob.
I have been Ben.
We'll see you all next week. We should have a special guest on with us next week, Mr. Mark Delaney, the creative director of Digital City. Thanks to Titan Books and Comics Domain for all the stuff we've talked about today. Also, Comics Domain do a subscription service, which is actually surprisingly good. It means they don't need to hunt down comic book stores.
Yeah, what they do is they will bundle up all your comics. They will send them to your door. So you have all your latest comics coming straight to you. You don't have to go out. You don't have to go fizz around, try and find them. They will all come to you as soon as they come out. Anyway, we have been 4Panel. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.